everybody, including you, including me, needs a little help. Even if you have trouble admitting it. You know, it doesn't matter how long you've been in sales. The more you learn, the more you earn. It's just that simple. And if your sales needs help, it may be time to consider the Gittimer Learning Academy. It's the fun and easy and gamified way to brush up on sales fundamentals and learn some new advanced strategies to close the next deal. You know, sales, closing, that's what it's all about. Or creating the atmosphere where the other person wants to buy. We have hundreds of hours of lessons on closing, referrals, prospecting, you name it. You won't find a more comprehensive library of sales knowledge anywhere on the planet that you can actually use 1 minute after you learn it. Go to GittimerLearningAcademy.com today and sign up for a free demo. I love free, and so will you. Jen.
Hey, Jeffrey.
You know, I was on iTunes yesterday, and I'm pissed.
Why are you pissed?
They deleted some of our stuff because it's, quote, too old.
It's because we produce so many episodes. Oh. They only keep a certain amount. I don't know what that amount is.
So here's the deal.
Yeah.
I talked to Doug, I talked to Nada, and we are going to get some of those episodes back because they were classic.
Love it.
And we're going to set them out again so that our diehards can take advantage of that wisdom that seemingly is off the air, but it's not.
Well, let's do it right now, like with this episode.
Cool. Let's
All
go.
All right. Take a listen.
Where do we start this? An answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls.
I'm tweeting that puppy.
Okay. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Sell or Die podcast, the global premier personal development and sales podcast on the planet. My name is Jeffrey Gittimer, author of The Little Red Book of Selling and my newest book, The Sales Manifesto.
And I'm Jen Gluckow, author of Sales in a New York Minute. We are interviewing leaders in business, sales, and personal development to give you the strategies it takes to make more sales and make more money.
Strategies that you can take out into the street and turn into money 1 minute after you hear them.
In a manifesto moment?
Well, no, more like in a New York Minute.
Oh, then. Thank you to all the diehards out there supporting us with listens and five-star reviews.
Be a star on Sell or Die. Leave your own review. Come on. Go to your computer right now. Go to iTunes right now and write down, type down, talk down exactly how you feel about this podcast and how it might affect others.
All right. I want you to enjoy today's show. Take notes and tell us what you think on our Sell or Die Hard official Facebook group.
All right, let's get to it. It's time to sell or die. Tell me about your new book a little bit.
Well, my new book was really the result of four years of blogging, the collective feedback of more than 100,000 people in B2B sales. So it's not really just what I think. It's really the collective wisdom of all of those people out there that are in the trenches.
Hang on a second. If it's the collective wisdom, I'm assuming chapter one is your price is too high. Isn't that what 100,000 salespeople say? I'm just checking. Okay, go ahead.
That's what all the people that lose deals say was the
exactly.
reason, right? It's never really true. It's never really true. So the reason I wrote the book is everywhere I go in the world, and I work in Europe, North America, and obviously the Asia Pacific region, but the number one problem that people say they have, we all know it's not a problem, it's a symptom. We did that on the last show we did together, but they just say, look, I know how to sell, but I just don't have enough pipeline. And I smile and look back at them and say, well, if you really knew how to sell, you would have enough pipeline, because separating creating pipeline from selling is a complete act of insanity if you're thinking that way. There's no B2B salesperson on the face of the planet that can make their number with SDR leads, inside sales leads and marketing leads going to them. You know, my experience is anywhere from 40 to 60% of someone's number has got to be found by them themselves, you know, by monitoring for trigger events, generating referrals, doing their own outbound.
It's amazing how many salespeople are relying on marketing to send them leads rather than creating the leads themselves. But your book, Combo Prospecting, the powerful 1-2 punch that fills your pipeline and wins sales, talk to us about combo prospecting and what that is. How do I do a combo prospect?
Yeah, do I need another person to go with me? Is it a two-person sale?
Oh, the whole basic idea is this, is one of the things that really alarmed me in the world of selling is how people have drunk the Kool-Aid of social selling. You know, we all know that building a strong personal brand, you know, online is really important because 3/4 of buyers will research us before choosing to engage. And we all know that we need to research, and the social platforms are great for that. But what I found happened was people would buy into social selling, and the result was they would stop using the phone. And the phone was the original social selling tool. And what we all know is that email on its own doesn't really yield the results you need. Phone on its own doesn't, and social on its own doesn't, but the right combinations of things will. So the first basic combo is that if you simply basically triple somebody, if you just phone, voicemail, email, and you do it in quick, rapid succession, even someone with a B grade message that is doing 30 to 50 of those every single day is going to build sales pipeline. So the thing I found is that people weren't doing the right combinations of activity to really break through with people. Everybody today has got a cell phone. Many people have now got two. I had one of my clients use the combo techniques, and he called a cell phone. He sourced the cell phone number with one of the data intelligence tools that you can use. And the first thing the guy said on the other end of the phone is, "How did you get my number? Who are you, and how did you get my number?" And he said, "Well, I use a data intelligence tool on the internet." And he says, "Well, what do you want?" And the guy got a meeting. And at the end of it, the guy said, "Look, I'll see you next Tuesday, but never ring this number again." It was the guy's personal mobile phone. So people are increasingly getting one for work and one for their personal life. So the first thing about combo is that you need the right narrative. The first third of the book is kind of really about that. There's no point getting busy if you don't have the right narrative with people. And then you need to blend that with the right combinations of outreach to actually break through.
Do you think there's one of those tools that's more powerful than the other? Do you think that the phone is more powerful than email or more powerful than social selling?
The phone is more powerful than anything else because you're creating a human connection with your voice. So the dulcet tones of our own voice is going to create a connection with the other person. It'll give us the best ability to provide influence and actually have their attention. But the problem is, how do you get the person to answer the phone? How do you break through to them? So, you know, what I say to people is, if you use basic combinations, so you phone, you leave voicemail, you send email, that's just the basic thing to do, but you can combine that with sending them a Twitter direct message. You can text message them. You can send them a LinkedIn email. If you wanted to, maybe you could send them a connection request. You could even maybe, depending on their industry, even use Facebook Messenger. But the reality is you want the person thinking, "Holy hell, my beeper's melting down, Batman. You know, if I don't get back to this person, they're just going to keep going." So if you use pragmatic research and personalize. So again, either a trigger event, something they've published out there, a common connection, ideally a referral, because the fastest path to revenue and the highest probability of a sale for everyone out there in the world is by monitoring trigger events, because that gives you context, and then a referral because it begins with trust. So if you can begin with trust and context, you'll dramatically compress the sales cycle and actually accelerate. But what you want the person thinking is, do you know what? This person deserves a reply. And I say to people, if they reply to the text or they reply to the email, don't stay in that channel, switch to the phone. As soon as you possibly can, you've got to switch to the phone and just call them. Really, really important.
And do you think that the push out to get that person is as powerful as value messaging through the same channels and trying to pull that person?
Well, you really want both. So we want to attract people into our orbit. But at the end of the day, if you're going to go and build pipeline and be a salesperson, you know, rather than a passive social marketer, a lot of people confuse marketing with selling. And a lot of what people call social selling is really social marketing. And there's definitely a role for that. I have leads come to me through social. because I attract people with content. And I think every salesperson needs to learn how to become a micro marketer. It's really important today because we're in a digital world and salespeople who can't write are in trouble. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, you need a value narrative to grab someone's attention. So, you know, one of the acts of insanity I see with salespeople is that they've got the wrong conversation, the wrong message they have. They run around saying, "Let me tell you about who I am and the company I work for and what we do." And the truth is, no one is interested. Just no one cares. We've got to lead with why a conversation should matter for them. And unless we can provide value in conversations for people well in advance of that person ever deriving value from becoming a customer, if we can't provide value in the conversation, then we don't deserve their time at all. So we've got to think, what am I going to give them if they'll have a conversation with me? And the thing I say to people is call people up and have a narrative that's something like, hey John, the reason I'm calling is I work with other people in exactly your industry. And there's some common things that I see that they're challenged with. And a couple of my customers have managed to really move the needle on this particular metric that we see is important. Would love to get together with you for 20 minutes and share with you some of the things I'm seeing. How is your calendar for Tuesday next week? So, and the person thinks, if I meet with this person, I'm going to get some insights about what others in my industry are doing, or I'm going to get some insights on how people are moving the needle on this metric that's important to me. Because the really important thing here is that if we don't have a customer-centric conversation, if we're not viewing the world through their lens rather than ours, if we're not thinking about them with their customers rather than us trying to make our sale, we're never going to get someone's attention in a way that really works.
Right. I don't care about your sales pitch. I only care about what's in this for me.
Yep, 100%. So you mentioned one way salespeople sell with acts of insanity. What are some of the other acts of insanity you've seen in sales? I love that
term.
Yeah,
I want to see if I'm insane.
Well, Jeffrey, we already know the answer to that.
Well, let me just go through a few. So the first is stopping the use of the phone is the biggest act of insanity I've seen. I've got a client I'm working with. When I first started working with them, their sales floor is an open office. They've got about 9 salespeople in the Sydney office where I was working with them. And when I was on the sales floor, the first comment I made back to the CEO a little later was, "Man, your sales floor is way too quiet." And he says, "Oh, well, salespeople aren't allowed to make calls on the sales floor. They need to go and book one of the small conference rooms if they want to make calls." And I looked at him and I was trying not to be rude, but I think he saw that on my face. And I said to him, that is crazy. You want to create a buzz. You want them on the phone. You want them hearing each other fail. You want them to learn from each other. You want to create a little bit of competitive spirit. And they said, "Well, yeah, but when the salespeople are on the floor, they were disturbing other people in the office." And I said, "Well, good."
Exactly.
Let them fight to see who's the loudest. Man. As a customer, I don't mind hearing activity in the other end of the room.
Yeah. No, I love that.
But
that boss has obviously never been a salesperson.
No. And, so the first thing is the rise of the silent sales floor is real. Sales floors are getting quieter and quieter, and a silent sales floor will absolutely kill a business. So, and in line with that, the other thing that's insane is people have bought into this thing that you can be super passive and be successful. You know, you can just try and run some kind of attraction strategy online and groom your personal brand and do things in LinkedIn and that'll get the result for you. It won't. It's important. It's part of all of the combinations of success, but you've got to be proactive and you've got to go outbound and you can't depend on others. So, they're probably two of the biggest things that I think is hurting people is people are just way too passive.
Why do you think that's become a trend?
I think people are hardwired in their human makeup to treat the phone like it's covered with spiders. You know, we all hate rejection. We all build fear in our own mind. You know, another thing I see with salespeople is that they wrongly misinterpret people not getting back to them as people rejecting them.
Yeah.
And they're completely different things. It's just that people are busy. So we build all these negative scenarios in our mind thinking, you know, this person won't like me interrupting their day.
Meaning they're taking it personally.
Yeah. I mean, look, I say to people in life, if you plan to be a serious leader at some stage in your life, the very best thing you can do is go and work in sales for 3 to 5 years.
Work in a boiler room. Yeah. Work in a cold calling space where you have to pick the phone up. I think one of the coolest things that you bring out in your book is Jeb's 52 straight days of calling.
Yeah, that story is amazing.
And just think about it now, because this has a way deeper meaning than he was persistent. He has become a leader as a result of his persistence. And other people would give up after the first or the second no, and he took 51.
The story, for those that don't know, is about Jeb Blunt calling the same prospect every day at the same time, leaving a voicemail every day for 52 straight days until finally the prospect called him back and said, "You're not going to give up, are you?" And then he won the sale. And what was it, like a $2.5 million sale or something?
It was $2.5 million.
I mean, even if it was only $2 million, it's still a lot of money.
And
my feeling about that is that's 100% based on persistence and the ability to have something to say when the guy actually calls you back or you actually make contact.
But let's break that down for a second. So how long do you think those voicemails were? I don't know, total a minute?
Yeah. Less.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So he spent between dialing the phone, listening to the guy's message, and leaving his message, let's just say a minute, okay, times 52. So he spent 52 minutes working on – now, that's not to say it wasn't a hard sale, right? Once he got in touch with the prospect, it took a while to win and get the other guy out that was the current vendor.
I guarantee you this, that CEO was receptive.
But who wouldn't invest an hour of time to get a $2.5 million sale?
Yeah, Jeb absolutely knew. He knew he could help this guy. And that to me is another really important thing. Selling is first and foremost the transference of belief. If you're not a true believer in your ability to improve the personal and professional life and improve the business of the people that you're selling to, then you shouldn't be doing what you're doing, right? And Jeb was thoroughly convinced that he could help this guy and that they needed to talk.
Mm-hmm. Pretty cool.
Yeah, his conviction and his value proposition is what won. His persistence just got him in the door. But once you get in the door, if you have nothing to say, you're toast.
Okay.
Look, it's so true.
So one of the first things I read in your book was look at your fists, and you have your social fist and you have your phone fist. And you have a lot of boxing analogies and metaphors, and I'm dying to know, do you box?
I actually did karate when I was younger. I went to the world. Well, when I was saying younger, I'm 55 now. This is when I was 40.
Oh,
I went
to the 55. If I ever get that old, I hope they shoot me.
This is a very funny story. I went to the world titles, but it's very, very segmented. So I was in the old fat men in a very low level of belt category. But I managed to get a bronze medal, but I did karate, and I enjoy watching boxing, you know, obviously with mixed emotion because of the brutality of the whole thing. But the reason I use that as a metaphor is that sales is a brutal profession. You get absolutely bashed up.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that I find really amazing is so many people that are ill-equipped to be in sales emotionally and psychologically are attracted to it. So being a sales manager, I think, is one of the hardest jobs on the face of the planet. Salespeople need to love and appreciate their sales manager. They have a tough gig, and organizations are stripping out layers of management. Sales managers are getting spread really, really thin. And yet I know for myself, when I first got into my sales career, it was my sales manager that saved me. You know, he coached me, he mentored me, he went with ride-alongs, you know, with me. It's a really critically important role. So I use the boxing metaphor because it's a really brutal profession. But your enemy is not the customer. We need to love our customer, but but we need to beat the apathy out of them. You know, every customer needs to change states. They need to change the way they're running their business, the way they're viewing their problems, the way that they're executing. And what we need to do is find a way to break through with the right narrative, build a really compelling business case, help them rally the support that they need inside their organization. And if we can't do that, well, we can't be successful. So, you know, that was the reason I used the metaphor.
Cool.
Obviously. Like, and, you know, when you're the sales boss, there's another set of criteria that goes along with it. The sales manager, in my opinion, and I've written about it, needs to be able to make the sale when the salesperson cannot. And they need to be able to make the sale right in front of the salesperson so that they build that credibility through either word of mouth or rumor that, hey, you know, boss was in here today and I couldn't make the sale and this guy made it. And I think that's got a hell of a lot to do with the credibility of the sales leader.
Yeah, and there's plenty of sales managers out there that are not that Jeffrey, right? They're admin jockeys, I call them. You know, they have a flamethrower in one hand and their Excel spreadsheet forecast in the other.
Well, because they're beholden to another boss to, quote, make the number.
And yeah, exactly.
If they only knew that if they help their sales guys make each individual's number, they can double their number.
Yeah. So there's a lot in your book about earning the right to win and earning the right to engage. Explain what you mean by that.
Well, there's three things that buyers today expect from all sellers. So the first thing is they expect us to truly know them. They expect us to personalize their experience. And they expect us to anticipate their needs. They almost expect us to be mind readers, right? And those things are really tough. So if we want to earn the right to be successful in sales, there's lots of personal development things that we need to do, right? So, you know, we need to be resilient. We need to have belief. We need to generate our own insights. We need to, you know, be aware. We need to be situationally aware of the customer's world. Some people say we need to be an expert about the customer, but it's tough to be more of an expert about them than they are about themselves. But we need empathy and insight for their particular world. So that's really the first thing. But the next thing is we need to earn the right to be successful by doing research. And that's because that's what buyers expect today. The vast majority of engagements that buyers have with sellers are very, very unsatisfactory for the buyer. And you know, I know myself, a lot of people that try and engage with me, they just don't do really basic fundamental research. I help organizations hire salespeople. And the thing we do in the morning of an interview for the shortlist before people come in is we jump into the hiring manager's LinkedIn profile and we say, okay, how many of these people have looked at your profile? And if they haven't looked, we cancel the interview. I know that sounds really brutal, but how the hell is this person going to go and be successful in the marketplace? Because you've got to do basic research before you turn up in someone's office or jump on the phone with them. So pragmatic research is critical. So that's one of the things about earning the right to go and engage with somebody. You need a point of view. You need a perspective. You need a way of providing value in the conversation. You need to do basic research.
And the basic research is so simple now. You can just Google somebody or LinkedIn somebody and look at their profile. And those two things and a little bit of thought time can give you pretty much what you need.
Well, Jeffrey, that's so true. And when I keynote at conferences, I actually open by, you know, very early by saying this. There's an incredible irony or paradox in sales today. It's never been easier for salespeople to be successful, never been easier for us to research and go and sell. And yet the failure rates in B2B selling have never been higher, and it's getting worse.
You talk about that in one of your recent LinkedIn articles. You talk about, I know why you're failing. What are some of the reasons for common sales failure?
The most common reason is that people have the wrong narrative. And on top of having the wrong narrative, they don't have a sense of mission and purpose in the difference they make in the lives of their customers. I really believe that professional selling has lost its way. People are focused on crunching the deal, crushing quota, closing the sale. It's all like this is something we go and do to our victims. And the truth is, you know, we need to love our customers and we need to serve them. So unless we're almost like a missionary and evangelist in how we're going out there to really change the lives of people, you know, we know there's a better way for them and we're passionate about it. If we don't have that sense of belief and that sense of purpose, if we're not about making the life of our customer better, then we're just not going to be successful, because people can sense intent. If they sense that our intent is for us to tell them about us and our product and for us to make our sale, you know, it's anathema to sales success. It's like trying to close the deal too hard too early. I often hear people call it sales breath. You know, it really turns people off. you know, if you're really desperate. So that's, you know, that's one of the ways where I just think that people are failing because they
should
don't
make seller diamonds for sales breath.
Exactly. Yeah. But I think you're looking at this from the perspective of the salesperson has to be a perceived value provider, or they're not going to get to the next stage. A, they got to talk to the person that can pull the trigger, and B, they have to engage that person in a way where they consider the salesperson of value to the company for the long term. And then it becomes, then there's no price war. Otherwise, it's a proposal from a marketing department and you're dead. Or from a procurement department and then you're dead because it's a price war. So I'm looking at it from the perspective of, you know, you have hit the nail on the head clearly, but it's also up to the salesperson to be able to convey that message. They have to be a passionate presenter.
Yes. Yeah, they absolutely do. So I definitely agree with that. The other thing they need to do is when they're doing that and being passionate, they need to go multi-threaded into accounts. So that's another big cause of failure that I see is that people become single relationship dependent. So if you're selling into government or into corporate or large enterprise, you know, there's going to be a group of people, some of which will say yes, and then a bunch of others who can say no. So even driver personality style of leaders are smart enough to know that they need to gather consensus to make change work in their organization. So people have got to think about who's the stakeholder group that constitutes consensus. I need to go at everybody concurrently, not go at one person who then becomes a blocker. Mm-hmm. And then I need to think about, which is what you were just talking about, Jeffrey, which is how do I make sure that I create progression every day in this opportunity? So just checking in, reaching out, having a coffee, being a professional visitor is not what it takes to be successful today, because buyers are just
It's coming in and having an idea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. Having a point of view, reframing the customer's thinking. I'm not the first to talk about these things, right? There's really nothing new in this, but you need a strategy that gives people a reason to want to engage with you. So important.
You may not be the first to talk about it, but the way you put it is very compelling and engaging.
I agree. And your accent makes you sound a hell of a lot smarter than you actually really are.
Oh, Jeffrey.
I actually thought my accent made me a hell of a lot more difficult to understand.
No, we love your accent, please.
Of course, right.
So you have this amazing content on LinkedIn, and I confess I read it all the time. It's fabulous. And one of your January articles is about the sales professional's oath. Yeah. Talk to us about the oath that sales professionals should be taking. What are the 5-10 things that they should be thinking about on a daily basis?
Well, the first thing is they need to be all about their customer and not all about themselves. And the reason I actually did this was, and I nearly got beat up almost by someone over this. They got very heated. Is my view is that selling is not really a profession. Selling is a blue collar trade that's dressed in a Wall Street suit. If selling really were a profession, there'd be, now I know some universities now are starting to do it, but generally speaking, universities don't offer degrees in selling. There's no license that you go get. There's no peak standards body. There's no consequences for malpractice. You know, if a salesperson
loses,
well, they eventually lose their job. They eventually lose their job, right?
And their reputation forever.
Yeah. Look, I agree with that. But what I see is a salesperson loses a deal and their boss says, "What the hell happened?" And they go, "Well, the customer's an idiot."
Right, exactly. If I had a nickel for every stupid customer, I'd be a
billionaire. It's the customer's fault.
but you know, if a surgeon leaves one of their instruments inside the patient after surgery, they don't get to say the patient was an idiot.
Exactly.
Right? And they lose their license.
I wonder if they found that going through the airport.
Well, speaking of airports, even pilots, you know, one of the I've published about 430 blogs, I think, in LinkedIn in the last four years. But the blog that's had the most ever reads was an article I wrote, and I interviewed the command pilot of an Airbus A380, and it was the closest that aircraft has ever come to actually going down. So one of the Rolls, it was the first time the big Rolls-Royce engine exploded. They managed to get the plane on the ground. But the pilot, when he landed, he gave every passenger on the aircraft his mobile phone number. And he said, when you fly with our airline, you're flying with a premium airline. You have every right to expect a better level of service. Right now, there's 1,000 of our employees trying to get you hotel rooms and sort all of this out. But right now, I want you to get at your mobile phone, grab a pen and paper. If you don't get treated the way that you believe you deserve to be, I want you to call me. You phone my cell number. And he gave every passenger his mobile phone. And what I did is I wrote a story about this, how everybody represents the brand. You know, got an amazing level of readership. I think 350,000 reads on that article. But here was the thing. When I say that selling is not really a profession, on that particular flight, it was incredible. They had him, the command pilot, they had his co-pilot, and they had the person in the third seat. It's the only aircraft where they still have a flight engineer. Every high-value profession in the world is getting disrupted. Jobs are disappearing. Sales is the same. In the airline industry, that flight engineer role is basically completely gone. But on the A380, there's a third person. But they also had a pilot checking him out, just watching him, because Qantas, very safe airline. They do this every 6 months with each pilot. And then there was another pilot watching the pilot checking him out, right? So this was a recipe for too many cooks in the kitchen, you know, big time when something bad happens. Mm-hmm. Before they rolled back, Richard turned to them and said, "We've got no confusion about who's in charge," right? Because he wasn't the most senior person in the cockpit, but he was the command pilot. Anyway, look, long story short, pilots get watched. And if anyone sees any bad little habits, they have their license yanked away from them and they've got to retrain and earn the right to go again. So my view is that, you know, all of these other things, accountants, lawyers, you know, they are professions. And selling can be done professionally, but people just don't act like it is. And that's why I really, you know, created the, you know, the sort of code of conduct or sales professionals oath. So things like turning up on time, doing your research, taking notes, having a proper system of record. It staggers me how many salespeople say they're a professional and they don't keep a proper system of record with what they're doing with their clients. I mean, if you went to your doctor and he just sort of nodded away and didn't put anything in his system about your health, he didn't record your blood pressure and what was happening, I think, what am I doing here? This, like, I've got to report this guy.
Can you imagine walking into the doctor's office after you'd just been there last week and the doctor says, "Well, how's your arm doing?"
And you were there for your head?
And the guy said, "It's my leg." "Oh, leg, I was going to say that next." I mean, it's just as ridiculous to think. But you go into a doctor's office today, they've got computers on every single desk in every single room, and they can access any bit of information that they need immediately.
One of my old former doctors that I don't see anymore used to have my records and my sister's records in one folder. And so she'd like be looking for something that was with me and she'd say like, "Okay, my sister, oh, there's you. Nope, that's your sister. Hold on." And I'm like, we're different people. Like, why are we two in the folders. Same folder?
Oh. Anyway.
Crazy.
Hey, while we're on this topic, can I just give you my top things for every salesperson listening to this? Please don't do these things. These are the things that say you're an amateur. The thing that drives me crazy is this. You phone a salesperson's cell phone number, and what you get is some automated robotic telco message saying, you know, leave a message, it'll be converted, you know, from voice to text, right? So they haven't even set up proper voicemail where you hear their voice. Drives me crazy. I don't really have that much in the States, but I see that in other places commonly. The other thing is you think, I need to call this person. I don't have their number. I'll look at one of their emails. You know, they'll have their phone number and their email signature at the bottom. And all they have is, you know, Bill at the bottom. They don't have their details there. You think, oh, well, I'll go to the LinkedIn profile. Surely they'll have their contact details in their LinkedIn profile. And they deny access to people, their contact details, because they don't want headhunters phoning them or something. It just, like, it's insane. Like, you're meant to be a professional salesperson, make it easy for people to contact you. The next thing that drives me crazy is they can't use basic tools of trade. I ran a two-day sales workshop for a global company in the last 2 days. And I did a little session on LinkedIn because I was talking about trigger events and the importance of them. The most powerful trigger events are role-based trigger events. LinkedIn's a great platform for that. This company has invested in giving all of their people the best CRM on the face of the planet, which is Salesforce. They've given them all Sales Navigator. They've given them data intelligence tools. And I said to them about LinkedIn, and it became apparent that they had no idea how to use it. And I said to them, look, I know I'm being harsh, but imagine if you paid a carpenter to come and renovate your kitchen and he didn't know how to use a drop saw. He wasn't sure how to use his tape measure. He couldn't cut anything in a straight line. You'd be thinking, get this person the hell out of my house, right? Like, this person's meant to be a proper tradesman.
Or at least lower his price.
Well, I'd be yelping about him.
Just get rid of him, right? But the thing I've said to them, how can you call yourself a professional salesperson if you can't use basic tools of trade? So you should understand your CRM and how you can push things into lead nurture and marketing automation programs. You should be masterful in LinkedIn. You should know how to build a Boolean search, do pragmatic research. Like, if you can't use these basic tools, you've got no chance of delivering the level of productivity that you're going to have to compete with.
Actually, the way to describe it is you're going to get beat by somebody who can.
Yes.
What do you think about the salesperson who's been doing it their way for the past 35 years and their way has worked, and so they think they still don't need they don't need LinkedIn? What would you say to them?
Well, one of these guys yesterday, because I talked about multi-channel outreach, and he said, "Oh, I just use the phone. You know, I might have to call 30 times before I get them, but that works for me." And I said, "Well, it might work for you, but it's not efficient." And lots of people are on platforms rather than just the phone. So it's like when you do personality profiling in an organization and people go, "Oh, I'm this type of person and people can take me or leave me as I am." And I go, "Well, hang on. Your job is to relate to people and communicate with people in a way that works for them. This is about them. It's not about you," right? So if you're some big celebrity that everyone wants to get to, then maybe that attitude is okay. But your job is to be a chameleon, to adapt, to engage with people in a way that works for them. So one of the sales managers I work with, a lady called Bridget Archibald, works with Salesforce. She said to me once, "I teach my people to try every way of breaking through and getting through to people until you find that one way that works for that particular person." So some people might just respond to text messages and not voicemail. Mm-hmm. Just do everything until you find the right way. So for a salesperson who says, "I've been doing this my whole life and it works for me," well, the world is changing, and it's changing really rapidly. And one day they're going to wake up and find themselves out of a job.
Cool.
And that day will come very quickly.
That is the harsh truth, yeah. My friend.
So listen, we're going to tell everybody to go get your book. I'm going to tell both my friends.
It's called Combo Prospecting by Tony J. Hughes. You can find it on Amazon.
The J stands for John.
And Tony, what's your website? Where do they find you?
Yeah, they can find me. So my public speaker site is tonyhughes.com.au. My sales methodology website is rsvpselling.com, and they can also find me in LinkedIn. And really appreciate you having me on the show. I love you.
Okay, well, our people will call your people, and thanks for being here.
Thank you, Tony.
Thank you.
That was an amazing interview.
That was unbelievable. Where the hell was it? It was in the archives, but iTunes forgot to leave it up, and now it's up, and now... But where should our diehards go right now?
All right. If you want more, go to Facebook and search for the Seller Diehards official Facebook group, or if you really want to get involved in the community, you can go to 2020, the numbers, 2020, salesvision.com, and sign up for the waitlist to get into the 2020 Sales Vision group.
And speaking of 20, your investment will be $20.
That's right. It's $20 a month. $20 a month.
Live answers, interactions. It's unbelievable. Go there. Do it now.
It is so much fun. I love it. All right, guys. Peace out.
This has been a presentation of the Sell or Die Network. For more podcasts that you can take out into the street and turn into money, visit SellorDieNetwork.com.